Hello and welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. I'm your host, journalist Holly Rubenstein, and here each week I'll be speaking to a very special guest about the seven chapters in their life's travel diaries. From their earliest childhood travel memory and the first place they fell in love with, to their hidden gem and what's at the top of their travel bucket list. We'll be uncovering their adventures around the world and the travel experiences and destinations that have shaped their lives. Hello everyone, I hope that your week is going well. We have got a special guest indeed today who knows his way around both the kitchen and the world. A culinary maestro with a passport full of flavours and a heart full of stories. It is the wonderful Gino De Campo. Born in Naples in southern Italy, Gino inherited his grandfather's love and passion for cooking. And after studying at catering college at the age of just 18, he moved to the UK. Soon after, he was spotted by a TV producer and quickly began to become a fixture on our TV screens on shows like Ready, Steady, Cook, On This Morning, and his own shows like Gino's Italian Escape. Much more recently, he joined his pals Gordon Ramsay and the lovely Fred Cyriex, of course a former guest on the podcast, on their much-loved Ultimate Road Trip series. Loved that show. And he is also the host of Family Fortunes, not forgetting, of course, a restaurant empire, several best-selling cookbooks, even a children's cookbook. Gino's travel diaries today are, I like to think, like a beautifully crafted recipe filled with zest, sprinkled with laughter, and of course infused with the warm embrace of the places he's explored, from the sun-drenched Amalfi Coast to the island of Sardinia, the olive groves of Puglia to the caves of Matera. Gino's episode today is a true love letter to his country of Italy and was just so much fun to record. So many laughs. We really had a great time and I know you're gonna love it. So fasten your seatbelts, everyone, and let's get started.
I'm sure you're going to be super nice. They are telling me you are the best. This is my first ever podcast, by the way.
Stop. No, it's not.
I did one very quick podcast with, I think the lady was called Giovanna. Something about mums, but that was a very quick one. I never had one podcast like this, like one-to-one.
I am so flattered. I was just saying to Luciano that when I started the Travel Diaries over 100 episodes ago now, that I wrote a list of 12 guests that I hoped would comprise my like dream season, and you were on it, Gino. So I am very, very, very happy to be chatting with you today.
That is my pleasure. My pleasure. Well, we could have done this long time ago.
Well, you know, you're a busy man.
That's true. But you know, for someone as nice as you, I always find the time. So it's fine.
That's so sweet. And so you're back in the UK now, having spent a lovely long summer in Italy. How was that?
It was fantastic. I spent a lot of time in Italy. I'm just coming back. I think I spent, at the end, it was about 3.5 months.
Gorgeous.
And it was just, you know, I always remember at the end of the summer how beautiful it is. To be able to spend the whole summer in Italy, I consider myself so lucky to be able that at this stage in life, I'm able to do that. So fantastic.
And does it help you also to feel, you know, a reconnection in a way to your heritage, to your roots?
Yes, very. It helps me in many ways. It helps me as a man to kind of remind me to be a gentleman. Reminds me the way I should, the things that I should eat, the way I should approach work. Because Italian people, they have a very different approach generally in life.
Yes.
It's not that they, you know, a lot of people, they say, well, Italian people, they're lazy, like the Spanish people, they always sleep in. Yes, I do like to have a nap every afternoon. That is my thing. I love to have a nap for a couple of hours in the afternoon. But when I say the approach, I mean the way everything is relaxed, everything is chilled. Mm. Nothing is a problem as far as Italians is concerned. only
such a nice way of life.
Such a nice way of life. So I got there, I inject myself with all these beautiful things and food and wine, of course. And then I come back here and somehow I'm more Italian than when I left.
Yeah, I can imagine.
That's what, probably the accent as well. I don't lose the accent because
yeah.
I'm always surrounded by Italian people. I always talk Italian, and with my restaurants as well. I'm eternally talking Italian to my chefs and to the people outside in the restaurant. So it's very difficult to shake it off.
You're talking about the quality of life,
yes,
of Italians. And I know that you spend your summers in Sardinia, don't
yes,
you?
This
I is do. Where you have your homes. And I'm sure that we will come on to Sardinia as part of your travel diaries
well, we
today.
Have to.
But of course. But speaking about, you know, the quality of life, I know you've mentioned this before. I've read in interviews, but I just watched on Netflix, you know, the Secrets of the Blue Zone, Live to 100
oh, yeah.
series. Which about the you know these unique communities where people live
yeah.
to these extraordinarily long ages,
yes.
Extraordinarily old ages, I should say, around the world. And of course, there's this region in Sardinia. So is that near to where you spend your time?
It's about an hour and a half away from where I live on the island of Sardinia, because I actually live on the island of Sardinia. I don't just go there on holiday. I spend probably about 6 months of the year there. And
yeah,
the
right.
place that you're talking about, I don't remember exactly the name of the place, but it's near Ostuni, in the middle of Sardinia, somewhere. And I've been there, by the way.
Have you?
Yes, I've been there a couple of times. I should remember the name, but my memory is never as good as when I have to do these kind of things.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yes, I've been there. And one thing that struck you is a town full of elderly people. I never seen so many elderly people in the town. And I was talking to a doctor there because I went there also for business. And the only reason he could give me is 100% what they eat and what they drink.
Yeah.
I met someone who was 111. He was a gentleman who was 111. Yeah. His name was Giuseppe. I remember his name was Giuseppe. And this guy was as sharp as you can think of.
And 111.
And he was telling me that the only reason why 111, can you imagine that? 111.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays that, you know, we obviously, do you think that humans now, they live less than they used to be before? I think, what's the average age?
Well, on that documentary, yeah. I think it was saying, certainly in the US, because the host is an American,
okay,
he was saying that the life expectancy in the US for the first time in a long time was decreasing.
Ouch.
And that was, I think, why he was particularly interested in discovering
the
these secrets of the Blue Zone. So, yeah, when you're out in Sardinia and obviously having visited that, you know, pocket in particular,
yes.
you know, I imagine then you're doing the same great things for yourself. You're having great whole foods, organic produce, good
100%.
Good wine.
I remember when I was in this little town, the only thing I could think of, please make sure you never bring your mother-in-law here. That is one thing that I wanted to make sure she would never see this town. Because the last thing I need is my mother-in-law to live until 120 or anything like that. That would make me, as much as I love Elizabeth. As much as I love Elizabeth, I was thinking, get Elizabeth out of this town now. No, joking aside, that's the way I live. Italian people that live pretty much like that. You know, we eat when everything is in season. And that, you know, it sounds a silly thing to say, something that everybody says, but it's such an important thing to be able to eat when your vegetable, your fruit are in season. Is I don't know how many times I actually have to say this to people. You spend less money and you gain much more flavor by eating fruit and vegetable when they are in season. And that's one thing that Italian people do really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Even today, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, obviously, Italians, like everywhere in the world, they still have mobile phones and they still live in this very frenetic life. But they think about what they put in their stomach much more than we do.
But it's harder to put it into practice here, I feel. It's like a broader cultural thing in Italy and on the continent in general. I mean, you know, there needs to be a shift in labelling and just in the way that
I think it's very
buy
easy.
Produce altogether.
I think it's a very easy thing to do. We are making this difficult. That's the problem. Because if I was in charge of a part of the government where is in charge of this, I would ban them. I would go to the supermarket and say, you are banned to sell anything that is out of season. And the reason why we ban you to do that is because we want our people in the United Kingdom to eat well, not to spend a lot of money in food if it's unnecessary to do so. And mostly things like, for example, strawberries that you guys produce very, very well here is not a necessity to bring them from all over the world on aeroplane and on boats and all of that.
Yeah.
So I would be as drastic as ban them.
Yeah. Or if not, like tax it super highly so that, you know, it's...
Yeah, but then you know what...
It's disincentivizing.
I know, but you know, Hollywood, the problem is that if you start to tax these things super highly, then you will still have these super rich idiots that will still carry on buying strawberries. And then at that point, you never sorted out the problem.
Yeah.
I think when you got a problem like that, you need to be drastic. It has to be like a dramatic way of doing it. I know that we live in a democratic world where we should be able to do and to say and to eat whatever we want. But there are certain things where we need the government to be stronger. And this will be one of them.
Yeah.
This will be one of them. I talked to my little girl, Mia, to my daughter, and she has no idea. Although she lives in a family where we are very foodie, she still has no idea when strawberries are coming out, when apples are coming out, when is the season of pears, when is the season of this, because it's not part of the curriculum of the school, it's not part of conversation that she has in the school. So it's one hell of a battle as far as concerning me. So I think we need someone strong in the government to do it.
And it's making me think about your childhood, because today, Gino, we're going to go on a journey through the 7 chapters of your life's travel diaries.
Oh, wow.
And we always start at chapter 1.
Is this like Back to the Future, but the other way around?
It's like This Is Your Life.
All right, this is my life. All right, I've always wanted to do that. This is super cool. All right.
But there are no surprise guests, sadly. Okay. Just me.
Well, you are my surprise guest, which is absolutely brilliant.
Thank you, Gino. We start at the very beginning with chapter 1, and that is your earliest childhood travel memory.
My earliest childhood memory. Well, I don't have many memory of traveling as a child because I come from a family, we lived on a farm, and my mom and dad, hardworking people. I remember my family, the biggest argument would always happen about the 20th of the month. And the reason why is because they could never reach the end of the month with the money that they were earning.
Mm-hmm.
So very hardworking family, always trying to save money. But one thing that I remember, my father, because in Italy we stop school at the beginning of June.
Yeah.
And we pick up school again about the middle of September. My father used to send us for summer holiday every single year, no matter how much it would cost, no matter how much money of debts he had to do. But that's what he wanted to do. So I always remember to spend June, July, and August in the region of Calabria, which is in the south of Italy. And we used to go to a little town, which, by the way, Holly, my sister still goes there on holiday, by the way, with this little town called Palinuro. And we used to go camping there. And
what did Palinuro look like? What was the feel of it?
Well, in my eyes, Palinuro looked like paradise because Palinuro had everything that I wanted as a child. Even the fact that my first girlfriend came from Palinuro. So obviously I remember that because it was the experience of the first kiss or the first love and everything else. So for me, Palinuro has always been a place so close to my heart, so much so, Holly, that I've never been back.
Really?
Since I left
Italy. Because you're worried it might have changed too much?
Yes. You know, one of the situations where you don't want to go back, because you think anything now that I'm going to see is going to disappoint me. And I don't want my memories to get fuzzy. And I just want to remember the beauty. I want to remember the sunshine. I want to remember the things that I used to eat in Palinuro, the sea, fishing with my father, playing with my sister on the beach. I those were the time, Holly, where my mother, she didn't even know what it means putting sun cream on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean, do you know, those were the days. Those were the days where the only thing I remember wearing was Speedo, because that's what we used to wear in Italy, right?
Yeah.
We never had like shorts like now, always in Speedo. By September, I used to be like the color of chocolate.
Yeah.
So I remember a lot of sunburns. I remember, not all great things that we should have done, but it's part of the experience.
Yeah. And so you say that your sister still goes there now. So what kind of holiday is she going there for? Is it a beach seaside holiday?
Oh, yes. She's going to the same camping place where we used to go. That is how crazy she is. Yeah. Now she does the posh camping. What they call it?
Like glamping.
Glamping. That's it. Glamping. Yeah, she does that. Mm. But still in the same place. It was very much based on the beach. Mm-hmm. And with the sun, we used to have, as I said, the only thing we used to have is a pair of Speedo, no, even a pair of flip-flop. By then we used to have a tent with my mom and dad. So we used to leave the tent about 8:30 in the morning, no breakfast, just a glass of milk very quickly. And we used to come back seriously just to eat. We used to eat and then we used to be out again. It was very much an outside hardcore summer holiday.
And that's a long time to be in a tent as well, 3 months.
Yeah, but we were only in the tent for two reasons.
Yeah.
One, when we were having a nap in the afternoon,
yeah,
because every Italian will have a nap, even when you're a kid. Or when once we were in the evening, but we were so shattered by the long day that,
yeah,
it didn't really matter if we slept in a tent or under the stars or on the beach. It would be fine. We would be
far. Sounds very wholesome.
Very, very, very. I don't know if I could do it now. And the other thing is, I always say I wish that my children would experience that.
Yeah.
But unfortunately,
it feels like a, like you say, of a moment.
Yeah,
in time.
But the time is gone. The time is gone for me to expect for my children to do a holiday like that. It will be probably unreasonable of me to ask them. I know that at some point I'm going to get one of them who's going to go there. With all the money that you have, why are we here in a tent? So it's not going to work.
Maybe you could give them like a taster of it for a weekend one day.
Well, we
How old is your little one, your little girl?
Mia, she's 11. Mia is 11.
Right. Oh, she'd still love camping, I would imagine.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. But it would be a very short camping trip. Let me put
Yes.
Although I have to say, you're right, because about six or seven years ago, for the first time, I rented a caravan here in the UK.
Mm.
I thought, you know what? I said to my wife, Jessica, let's rent a caravan. I want them to have an experience of some kind of caravan, tent thing. My boys absolutely loved it. Loved it.
Oh, there you go. Exactly. Yeah.
My wife less, but my boys, they loved it.
Caravanning is really popular. I had the chef James Martin on my podcast last season, and he just wants to be in his caravan. That's really the main way that he travels.
Oh, James
around.
Is really big. Yeah, James is really big in caravan. And I believe, if I remember right, James has a huge caravan that he goes around. Yeah.
It sounded a bit more like a tour bus,
Like. Yeah, I think he's got one of those, James. Yes, fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. And you grew up in Naples, Napoli, in southern Italy. So, away from your holidays, what was life like growing up in that part of Italy?
I was growing up in a little town called Torre del Greco, which is about 10 minutes away from Naples if you drive. Mm-hmm. It was incredible, but yet very hard.
Mm-hmm. And what do you mean by that?
I think it was incredible. It was very good until I was about 12, 13, 14. Until I started the big school, i.e. the catering college. Mm-hmm. When I started the catering college, then I realized that my little town was too little for what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And you know, Holly, something happens, which I don't know if it's right for me to say so, but I started to hate the town where I was. I started to feel claustrophobic. I started to feel that everybody knew my business. I started to feel that I would never be successful if I lived there.
Mm.
And I somehow started to hate it so much, the place where I was living, that I had to go.
And you ended up in my hometown of Guildford.
Oh, what? Are you from Guildford?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, wow, one second. This is cool. This is cool because the first ever play, the first ever town, apart from Torre de Greco, it was Guildford.
Yeah, I went to Guildford High.
Oh, I used to go clubbing in a place called, well, you probably nowhere near as old as I am, so you probably wouldn't know. But I used to go clubbing in a place called Bone Jungle. Do you remember the Bow Jungle?
No.
No, see, this shows how old I am.
Oh, clubbing in Bow Jungles.
Yes, clubbing in Bow Jungle.
I thought you said crabbing.
And no, I was clubbing. Like... No, I wouldn't go crabbing in Guildford. No. I'm talking about clubbing, partying, clubbing.
Okay, so in my day it was called The Drink, but I remember its previous incarnation was... Bojangles, so yeah.
And that is how long ago, and I can tell you exactly how long ago, it was 31 years ago.
Hmm.
And the reason why I know that, because this summer just gone, I turned 47.
It's a remarkable thing. You certainly don't look it.
Yeah, I feel it though. Thank you. I feel it. But it's 47. And I turned to my wife and I said, Amore, because I call her Amore, my love.
Yeah.
Amore, do you know that we know each other for 30 years? I met my wife when I was 17.
Yeah, a real
love
story.
And I'm now 47. A real love story. So, 31 years ago, Guildford, I will never forget that. I used to work in a restaurant called Il Cambio.
You did?
Il Cambio restaurant. And I remember even the name of the road, which used to be called Chapel Street.
Oh, yes. That's a pretty street.
It's a very little pretty street. Mm. And I remember the street because in the afternoon, I used to be the sous chef there, the second chef. In the afternoon, we used to go and pick up nettles, you know, the spiky leaves.
Yes, yeah.
Because our speciality used to be a squid ink ravioli stuffed with ricotta cheese and wild nettles.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so I used to go there. So this is my Guildford story.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's episode is supported by Airbnb. And what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like, last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb. Wow. Well, Chapter 2, you know, is the first place that you fell in love with. I mean, if it's not Guildford, where is it?
I loved Guildford. And I've been back to Guildford, but I have to say that the first place I fell in love with has to be the island of Sardinia. Mm. And this has happened to me about 10 years ago. Since then, I had this habit, I think probably the mistake that everybody does. You book this holiday all over the world. You wanted to go see the Maldives. I wanted to go to see the Barbados, the Caribbean. I wanted to go to America. I wanted to go to Australia. I wanted to go to Cuba, Mexico, all these things that you see on the internet in books. And yet you don't see what is a couple of hours away from where you live. And I was in America. I was in America on a boat. And next to me, it was a photographer working for a National Geographic channel.
Yeah.
So this guy was kind of an old guy. He was in his 70s. So I turned to him and I say, hi. We started to chat. And I said, look, you've been all over the world, right? He said, yeah, I've been doing this for the last 50 years, you know, going around the world and picture the world for holidays, for traveling. And I said, okay, tell me which one is the best place in the world that you've been, because that's where I want to go next. I thought he was going to say something like, I don't know, Fuji or the Bahamas or Hawaii. He went, the island of Sardinia. Mm. I was like, is this guy taking the mic just because I'm Italian? He wants me to hear something in Italian. I said, no, come on, tell me. He said, Gino, the island of Sardinia is the most beautiful place that I pictured. I was like, this is coming. I swear to you, I turned on the other side where my wife was and I said, okay, look, amore mio, whatever we do, next year we're going on the island of Sardinia because I've never been. 2 hours away from London when you get on a flight. Well, what can I tell you, Holly? I went there, I fell in love with the island. I fell in love with the island for many reasons, because the sand is great, the beaches are great, the water, the seawater is insanely beautiful. It's like being better than the Maldives. But then they got something on top of that. They got great food, great wine, and Italian people.
Yeah.
Now, this is not what you find in the Maldives. For example, if you go to the Maldives, of course you can be on these beautiful hatches on the water and they show you the picture and everything is great. You can swim with a shark. But when it comes to food, wine, culture, hosting, hospitality, they don't have it. They just don't. They're too young to have it. You know, we forget sometimes how culturally old Italy is. You know, what the Italian people done around the world with the Roman Empire and everything else. So it's when you go to Sardinia, you just have everything that you need for an amazing holiday. And that's why I just fell in love with the place.
We were just talking about Shaggy, that he was a guest on this season.
Don't say that, because you want to know what happened now that you said Shaggy. Can I tell you what happened?
Yeah, dude, okay. Tell us.
You were talking to my son, right?
Yeah.
Before.
Yes.
My son also happened to be my agent, the one who looks after me. And I was outside my office and he was talking about Shaggy. And then after a couple of minutes, you guys didn't talk anymore. I came in and I went, why are you talking about shagging? Why Holly wants to know anything about shagging? And he went, no, Dad. No. It's not shagging. It's Shaggy, the singer. And I was like, oh, all right. I mean, because I didn't think that was the kind of podcast we were doing.
I think he actually said that you love shaggy was his word. So it sounded like
you love. Now that you ask, I love both, but I do love Shaggy. Yes, I actually saw him about a year ago.
Did you actually?
We were in Ireland. It was myself, Shaggy, and Sting.
Oh, that, well, yeah, they work together so often, don't they? But the reason I bring him up was
What was the reason why Shaggy?
On his travel diaries, we'll come on to in a couple of chapters, your all-time favourite destination. And his all-time favourite destination is Sardinia.
No.
So he shared a love of the island, and I just thought you might be interested.
Oh, no, he never told me that.
Yeah, yeah. So he'll have to come and stay with you, maybe.
That's so annoying because I spent about God knows how many hours, couple of hours with them, and he never said that that was his favorite place in Italy.
How funny! I mean, it was quite interesting. He said that having grown up on an island himself and living on an island, he was saying that the water, that he experienced different waters in Sardinia, so that he would go in one bit and it felt brackish, and another one felt warm and velvety, and that he felt that the different sea waters had like different textures.
He's absolutely right.
Really? I couldn't quite understand it.
Have you ever been on the island of Sardinia?
I haven't. I would love to. I've been to Corsica, but I haven't been to Sardinia.
All right, you're very close. You were very close. You were about 20 minutes on the boat away from
Sardinia. Down in Bonifacio, yeah.
Now, I know exactly what he's talking about because I feel the same. Every time I take my boat out and I go through on the coast of Sardinia, there are places where the water is different from 10 minutes away.
How interesting.
Number one, hasn't got a lot of salt. So somehow you lick yourself. I do tend to lick myself just to test. And that, I don't know, to me is great, the fact that it's not too much salt. Then you go in some places where it's warm, some places where it's fresh, but not just fresh like you would imagine the perfect swimming pool to be fresh.
Really?
Then you go in other places and you're surrounded by fish, for example. Then you go into another cove, you're surrounded by octopus. There is a lot of dolphins on the island of Sardinia. So wherever you go, I'll guarantee you that at some point you're going to turn around and you're going to see a dolphin jumping somewhere.
Another thing that people would travel, 10 hours to have that kind of bucket list experience, seeing dolphins in the wild.
To see the dolphin in the wild. Well, you don't have to do 10 hours. You get on a very low-cost airline. You jump from London, you go to Olbia. You can see them very easily.
I'm really hoping to go there next year, actually. I just can't decide about whether to go to the north or the south or the east or the west. What part of the island to go to?
Let me see. Okay, which one is east? If I look at something, is he left or right?
Right.
He's right. Okay, so you need to go northeast.
Northeast, right. Is that the Costa Smeralda?
Costa Smeralda, yes.
Smeralda.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Yes.
But one second. Not because that is the most expensive coast pretty much in the world. No. Because let me tell you something. In Costa Smeralda, whenever I mention Costa Smeralda, everybody freaks out. Of course, Gino, the Costa Smeralda, Porto Cervo, Porto Rotondo, where all the mega yachts are. No, guys. The Costa Smeralda, it can be done however you want. You can pay 200 euro for a plate of pasta, or you can pay 10 euro for a plate of pasta. And I'll guarantee you that the 200 euro and the 10 euro plate of pasta are as good as each other.
So how do you seek out the inexpensive option and know that it's a good one, a good alternative?
Oh, you need to make sure that the place you go is full of Italians.
Right.
It's like when people, they say to me, I go often to Venice, and they say to me, Gino, which restaurant you should go to Venice? I always say, look, whenever you see the gondolier eating in the restaurant, that is the place to go. Don't waste your time on fancy restaurant. If the people who's driving the gondola are stopping there to eat, that is the place to go.
Right. That is a very, very good tip. You just got to be eagle-eyed and spot them.
You just be eagle-eyed. Whatever you see the Italians that they're chatting and they're outside the restaurant having a plate of pasta, whatever they have, and that is the place to go. If you see the tourist, run miles away.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. And this is, we're still in the chapter of the place the first place that you fell in love with? Speaking of falling in love, obviously we fell in love with you on our TV screens, but I was really interested to see that it was, you know, it wasn't actually your intention ever to be on TV. This kind of happened a bit by chance.
No. I am right now, and for the last 25 years of television, because this is how long I've been in television, 25 years, I've been living someone else's dream. So it's never been my dream to be on television, never been my dream to write cookbooks, never been my dream to do pots and pans or the things that I do. No. My dream has always been to cook and to own a couple of restaurants. That has always been my thing. The television just happened. And it just happened that when it happened, I liked it.
Yeah, and you were good at it.
When you say good at it, I've always approached television to say, okay, if I'll do it, I have to do it my way. I cannot be someone else on television. I can't. You need to be an actor to be able to do that, especially for so long.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know what? I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go for it as Gino da Campo. If they like it, they like it. If not, it doesn't matter because this is not my dream anyway.
That's quite a liberating perspective, isn't it?
Yes, Holly, so liberating, because I think that is the reason why then I made it on television. The fact that I didn't have any pressure. I didn't have to do it because of money. I didn't have to do it because I wanted to be famous. I just wanted to do it because I liked to do it. And that's it.
And is it true that you were a private chef for George Michael before that?
Yes. I used to work in Belsize Park, in a restaurant called the Orchard Restaurant. Mm-hmm. Since I said before I don't have a good memory, but I'm actually impressing myself that I remember. See, in life, you remember so many silly little things, but then the important one, I never remember them. But anyway, so I was in this restaurant called the Orchard Restaurant, and that was the time when George Michael was recording Jesus to a Child, the album Jesus to a Child.
Yeah.
And he used to come to the restaurant every single lunchtime. And every single lunchtime, he used to eat the same thing, which was tagliolini, you know, like tagliatelle, but very, very thin, with fried courgettes. That's it. That's what he wanted. Fried courgettes and Parmesan cheese on top. That's it. That's what he wanted.
A creature of habit.
Oh, yeah. He liked that. Probably because he didn't have any cream or anything like that. So good for him for the singing, I guess. Yeah, it was quite simple. It was quite straightforward, simple
quite
food.
Light.
Light, yeah. And I remember after 2 or 3 weeks, he asked the owner of the restaurant if he could have me for about a month by the time that he finished the album. So he didn't have to come out and come to the restaurant.
Yeah.
I think I remember once he said it's like he didn't want to break the habit because he believed in like a lucky charm.
Right.
So he said,
okay.
Every time I can, he's working what I'm doing. So he didn't want to break the habit. So he wanted me to cook the same plate of pasta. I remember I was telling him all the time, come on, man, let me do something different.
Yeah, for you, it's like Groundhog Day every single day. Like.
Yeah. No. I want the same thing. Okay. You pay. You can have whatever you want. Really nice guy. Really nice guy.
Oh, such a talented man.
What a talented man. And what I remember about him was the charm.
Yeah, the X factor.
He was he had something that nobody had. He was a true gentleman. That's what I always say to him. When people ask me about him, a true gentleman.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. Well, we move on to chapter 3, Gino, and that is the place where you learned the most about yourself. Where would you pick for that?
Oh, I think it has to be Positano on the Amalfi Coast.
Uh-huh.
When I was young, when I was about 14 years old, I had a troubled year that year.
Mm-hmm.
My father wanted me to become a doctor. So he signed me up into a school which was far too difficult for me. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't want to go to that school.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go to the catering college. I wanted to be a cook like my grandfather, right? But my father was very adamant. You know, those days were the days that when your kind of parents chooses for you.
Yeah.
What you should have been in life. So I was 14 and he signed up to the school. But Holly, I think I've been to that school about 4 or 5 times. I used to bunk off school every single day.
And the school was in Positano?
No, the school was in the town where I was born, Torre del Greco.
Right.
But what I used to do, because I wanted to make sure that nobody would see me around my little town, otherwise they would know that I used to bunk off school, I used to get on the train and I used to go to the Amalfi coast. So I used to do Sorrento, Positano, Amalfi, just to waste time.
What amazing places to waste time in.
I know. The fact that people from all over the world would come to Positano, and I used to go there just because I was banking off school.
Yeah.
But it was such an important place, an important time for me, because that was the place where I had then the courage, as a 14-year-old boy, to tell my father I did not want to listen to his what he had to say, but I was already a man by myself and I wanted to go to the catering college. So that place there changed my life.
The course of your life.
Somehow gave me the strength to talk to my dad. I don't know what Positano did to me, why he gave me the strength, but that was the place that changed everything.
And how did he take it when you had that conversation?
Oh dear, 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 dear. My father was a very complicated man, and he never raised his hands or anything like that, but he had this unique way of be able not to talk to you or to look into your eyes for a long time. And I think that he did that for about a couple of weeks, and that hurted me more. I wish he would have just beat the shit out of me, but then everything would have been okay. So I wish he did.
He blanked you for a while.
Oh my God. He could have blanked people the way that only he could have done it. And that was really painful.
Mm. And then when he saw your success, you know, now, did he get to see your success, your dad?
My mom and dad, they died about 10 years ago.
Okay.
They both died very short to answer.
That's tough.
Yeah, that's tough. And they kind of saw the beginning. You know what my father saw? My father saw the Ready Steady Cook times.
Okay.
Do you remember when I used to do Ready Steady Cook?
Of course.
Yes.
The bonus of being off school sick with like a cold or something was that I would be able to be off and watch Ready Steady Cook with my mum.
Ready Steady Cook, yeah. I remember that, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Between 3 and 4. Ainsley, Anthony Ward Thompson, James Martin.
Yeah.
Everybody was there. Nick Nern. Everybody was there.
Yeah. The green, what was it? Red peppers and green tomatoes? No.
No,
red
green
tomatoes.
Pepper, red tomato. Yeah.
I do like a green tomato, though.
Yeah. So they saw the beginning.
Yeah.
They didn't see the. Actually, they saw when I won I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Oh, wow. Right.
So when I was crowned the King of the Jungle, they saw that. And a couple of years later, then they went.
So your dad got to see that you made the right decision that worked for you.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And never once, Holly, never once I threw it in the face at him that I was right to take the decision.
Mm-hmm.
I so wanted to do it so many times. You know, when you got a, you know, when you got a stone in your shoe and you say, okay, this is the time I'm going to tell him.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessary. I think as you grow up, you then think life is too short for this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, chapter 4, Gino, is your all-time favorite destination, the big one, the hardest question of all, where would you pick?
I think the way I sold the island of Sardinia, you're going to have to expect me to say the same.
I can't now.
Yeah, we can talk about the Costiera Amalfitana, you know, the Amalfi Coast, the Sorrento, Amalfi, Positano, Maiori, Minori, the island of Capri. We can talk about everything, Venice. We can talk about... I will stay in Italy, by the way, in my old time. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I know that there are many beautiful places around the world, but I don't like to travel that much. So
I
think there is a lot of beauty in Mediterranean.
It's not, I mean, of all the all-time favorite answers, Italy is by far the most popular answer from my 100 plus guests thus far.
I was going to ask you that, by the way. I was going to say, come on, Holly, tell me all the people that you spoke to.
Italy and
which
Japan.
One is,
Italy
and Japan. Yes. Oh, at least I didn't say France. Yes.
No, not that much about
no
France.
No idea how happy you just made me. Italy and Japan. But was it Italy first?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Italy, yeah, definitely. First. I mean, you know, there are enough answers about Italy to make a mega mix of like three episodes, you know, and all over Italy as well, which I find really
interesting. Yeah, but tell me, which one is the place that the people kind of tend to say more in Italy? What was it?
Southern Italy, I would say.
Southern Italy. Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah. Cool. All right. So we are in Puglia, Sicily, Amalfi Coast, those kind of places.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of which, obviously we're chatting also today because you've got your new show coming up, Gino's Italy, Secrets of the South. And I am so excited about this because a week today, I am going for the first time to Puglia on my holiday.
Oh my. Okay, first of all, I would like to mention the fact that I was not fishing for you to promote the show. Eh? I just mentioned Puglia because it happens to be in the south of Italy.
Yeah, of course.
But now that you mentioned that, yes, the show is going to come out. And it's called Gino's Italy, Secret of the South.
Yeah, and you're exploring all these areas that I'm excited to visit. Bari, Gallipoli, Salento.
Well, I did two regions. I only chose two regions. I chose Puglia and Basilicata. Basilicata, which is in the middle between, it's rich in the middle of Italy, between Puglia and Campania.
And is it Basilicata that has Matera in it?
Yes, brava. Yes, Basilicata is where Matera is, yes.
Another destination that seems to be coming up more and more on the podcast as well.
Very
people
beautiful.
Discovering it, you know? It's
so beautiful. Mm. And that's where they filmed all the James Bond things there. And everything is like, it's like living 2,000 years ago. You really can feel how those people lived 2,000 years ago. Very, very beautiful. But yeah. Puglia. Holly, have you ever been to Puglia?
No. This is my first time. I'm going with my 11-month-old daughter and my husband and my mum.
You are going to love Puglia.
Oh, you're going to
love the people of Puglia, but you are going to love the food in Puglia.
So tell me about the food. What should I order?
I think nowadays, today, I would say probably the second, if not the first, the top region in Italy as far as food is concerned.
Really?
Even more than Tuscany.
Because it's a cuisine that is influenced by a lot of the former occupiers of the region, isn't it? So it's got a lot of different influences.
It's got influence from Africa, believe it or not. It's got influence from all the Moroccan side there. It's got influence from the Spanish people because we were conquered by the Spanish. It's got influence from the Greek, from the Turkish. It's got influence from everything. But somehow, the reason why Puglia is so great with food and ingredients because Puglia is completely flat.
Yes.
So it's called tavoliere, so a big table. That's how we call it, tavoliere, the big table. It's flat. Very big on in olive oil, so we grow in Puglia all the major olives that you can think of to produce olive oil is done in Puglia, is done in the south of Italy, and it's just great. You're gonna have to try the burrata, burrata, the mozzarella with the cream inside. Vegetable, Holly, they are the best in vegetables. They do vegetables in every way, shape, or form: fried, boiled, sautéed, and all. Do you like seafood?
Oh, love seafood.
Do you like raw seafood?
Raw seafood, like ceviche type thing?
No. See, ceviche is prepared and you put a kind of a dressing on it. Although it's raw, you put a dressing. I'm talking about raw food, raw seafoods.
I would certainly give it a go.
I mean, they just pick up the prawns from the sea, they cut them in half, they put them on a tray and you eat them.
Mm.
They pick up the mussel from the sea, they open them up and you eat them. Clams, razor clams, anything like that.
So I need to get a seafood tower.
Yes, you just tell them crudo. C-R-U-D-O.
Mm.
So Gino said he wants to try the crudo. So everything that is raw.
Okay. Well, I will let you know what I think. I'm so excited. It sounds like so up my street and just that gorgeous freshness. Oh. Will be really,
when are you
really
going?
Exciting.
Which months are you going?
I'm going in 7 days.
in 7 days. So this is a very good time because it's not too hot.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I'm hoping it'll be perfect. A good time. Yeah, really.
It's sunny, but not too hot. Yeah. So it's perfect. So yeah, that's what I did in the journey. I showed all the secret places that people should go in Puglia. And I did the same in Basilicata.
We'll be back with Gino in a moment, but now we're going to hear from my mum, Barbara, who is making a surprise return appearance on the podcast. She's been invited in partnership with our friends at Airbnb to share some of her Puglian travel diaries, because we are speaking today, aren't we, mum, on the terrace here in Puglia beneath the blue skies, surrounded by bougainvillea.
Thank you for having me, Holly. It's lovely to be back.
Well, we are having a lovely time out here in Puglia, and I thought it'd be nice for you to share a little Puglian travel diaries with us. So how about we start with your all-time favourite spot here in Puglia?
Well, so far, I think my favourite spot has been Alberobello, which is a beautiful hillside village. And really, it's the home of these Trulli buildings, which are the ancient sort of farmsteads.
Yeah.
And Alberobello has over 1,500 of them. So it's
amazing.
Yeah, it's a centre for these beehive-shaped buildings.
Yeah, it's a very it's probably the most popular spot in Puglia, isn't it? I think there are lots of tourists. If in high season, it's very busy.
It is.
But it's definitely worth it because it's the highest concentration of these.
Absolutely. Properties. It's truly worth going to.
Truly indeed. And how about your hidden gem?
I think that would be Loco Rotondo, or the vineyards at Loco Rotondo.
Yeah,
It's a very special place, a white village up in the hills. From it, you can overlook the valley, the Itria Valley, which is dotted with some of the Trulli homestead buildings.
Yeah.
You can watch the sunset go down, grab a bottle of wine from one of the vineyards and go and sit and while the evening away.
Perfect. Yes, that was such a special evening, and were it not for us having a baby, I think we would have spent a lot of time there because
you could sit there for hours.
It's amazing. It's on the kind of outer perimeter road of Loco Rotondo that there are these vineyards that kind of wrap the perimeter of the hilltop, don't
they? That's right. And the buildings around the perimeter are these beautiful, I guess, 18th century buildings with beautiful balconies, metal balconies, where these people that live there overlook that valley every day.
That is very operatic, didn't we think?
Very operatic, yes.
Yeah, so I think that is a real hidden gem. What did we get the name of that vineyard?
Yeah, it was Sirosse. And I think they're known for their rosé and their white. And it's really quite reasonable wine. So you can buy a big bottle.
And then people were bringing like these little picnic baskets and watching the sunset. It was lovely. And how about what would be at the top of your Puglian bucket list? Because we haven't had so much time to explore the whole region. It's so vast, as we've heard from Gino today.
Yeah, well, I think that would be Lecce. It's a shame we haven't been able to get there, but it is it's quite a drive for us. But it's known for its Baroque architecture, and it's got a couple of very famous basilicas and beautiful squares. So, yeah, I would definitely head back to go there.
Yeah, me too. And while we've been away, we have, of course, been listing our homes on Airbnb, as we always do, and the earnings went towards our flights, which was great. Mum, you've been a super host on Airbnb for years, and you don't just Airbnb it when you go on holiday. You have guests staying most weeks, don't you, which generates you some extra income, which is great.
Yes, I live in a barn, and in the garden I have a studio, and I have rented that out for several years. People come from all over the world. Many regulars come back, and it's just great fun having it. It's a very simple process to be involved with, and just lovely meeting people from all over the world.
What would you say surprised you most about being an Airbnb host?
I think the simplicity of it is just incredible. I mean, nothing could be more simple. I mean, the whole process of the administration, the banking, the tax, it's just such an easy process.
Well, we've got a lot to thank Airbnb for. So thank you, Mum, for joining me on the podcast.
Lovely to be here. Thank you, Holly.
So chapter 5, Gino, is your hidden gem. As you say, you were uncovering all these secret places. What was your hidden gem when you were filming this series?
Oh, I think has to be... I think it has to be Matera.
Yeah?
Yes. Yeah. Has to be Matera because it's not a place where that many people know.
Yeah, it's just getting onto the radar.
Yes, it's just getting into the radar. And I really, the reason why I did this show, because I wanted to put it on the map for everybody to kind of consider to go to Matera.
Yes.
If you like the Flintstone, if you have any idea of what people would how would they live 2,000 years ago, well, that is the place to be. They have apartments in caves.
Yeah.
I've been in places where I'm thinking, are you guys out of your head? But they live in caves. It's
built into the rock, right?
Built it into the rocks. Yeah. I mean, it's surreal. And everything is white. Everything is so, it's like a postcard. That's it. Yeah. It's a postcard.
Yeah. Oh, it just looks amazing. I don't think I'll make it there this time, but it is a place that you could go to if you were staying in Puglia, isn't it? It's near enough.
Oh, my, yeah. You can. It's very near from Puglia to go to Basilicata. It's an hour away and off you go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great hidden gem. Yeah. And in complete contrast to wonderful Matera, our penultimate chapter, chapter 6, is your worst travel experience or the place that you would never go back to?
Easy. I don't know if I'm going to be fair. I don't know if my reason is a good enough reason for me to not to go back there. But I'm going to tell you anyway.
Please.
About 10, 15 years ago, I can't remember. So much I didn't like it that I tried to delete it from my head. Right? I went to Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
My wife always wanted to take me to Turkey. I said, okay, let's go to Turkey. So I went there with an open mind and stuff. I went there, I think this is where the problem was. I went there in August.
Mm-hmm. It's boiling?
No. It wasn't boiling. It's like being in hell. It's the heat. It was so intense that I've spent 2 weeks, I swear to you, I spent 2 weeks in my hotel room. I could not physically breathe the air of Turkey.
Were you on the coast, like on a coastal resort?
Yes, it was a coastal resort. Yeah. Yes, it was a coastal resort.
It was suffocating.
It was suffocating. It's like, have you ever, you know, when you blow your hair, when you blow dry your hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, take the blow dryer and shovel it in your mouth. So, hot hair into your mouth, and you trying to gain some oxygen into that situation. It was unbearable. Unbearable. One of the worst holidays that I had, because I just could not enjoy Turkey as someone should.
Do you think you'd go back at a different time of year?
First of all, I would say to all your listeners that if you ever go to Turkey, please do not even remotely think to go there in August when it's too hot, because you're going to have the same experience. And if you don't like the heat like me, it's just a nightmare. Yes, I should have gone a different month of the year. Would I go now? I should, because I like to give everybody a second chance to go there. But unfortunately, I now live on the island of Sardinia. I'm so in love with Sardinia that I'm thinking, why would I even waste 2 weeks of my life, or even a week of my life, where I could be a week extra here?
Yeah. So, oh, my God.
I'm
how
sorry.
Lovely
I'm
to love a
truth.
Place so much that that's how you feel. I think that is just so nice.
Yeah. And it's strange that that's not the place where I was born, is it?
Yeah.
It's strange the fact that I can love another place so much, which, by the way, Sardinia's got nothing to do with me. Eh? I don't have any relation to Sardinia. I don't have any blood. I don't have any family. You're right. You know, I probably love Sardinia too much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, our final chapter, Gino, is chapter 7, and that is the destination that is at the top of your travel bucket list. I mean, you want to just keep going back to Sardinia, but is there anywhere else that you would love to go?
No. See, that I'm not going back to the island of Sardinia, because that is not in my bucket list. I've already done that. I'm doing it.
Yeah, you're doing it every
now.
Year.
Yeah, okay, there is a place. A place that one day I hope that I will have the chance to see. It's the Hawaiian Islands.
They are amazing.
Have you been there?
I have, yeah. I've traveled around
them. Oh, you're so lucky. You know why I like the Hawaiian Island? And for me, it's a bucket list destination, because I used to watch do you remember that show? Was it called Love Island? I'm talking about in the 70s, 80s. There used to be a show of a boat going onto the island, and you used to have a small person greeting the people.
No, I don't remember.
Was it called Love Boat or Love Island? One of the two.
And it was set in Hawaii.
It was a set in Hawaii. You're listening now. As they're listening to us, they're going to shout to the ring. They say, it was called this. It was called that. It wasn't called this. It was called the other. I probably said Love Island because of the new shows and stuff. But I think it was called Love Boat,
mm-hmm.
if I remember right.
Okay.
And it was a TV series which the people were getting off of the boat and going to the island. And they would experience the island and fell in love, and then weird things would happen. And I remember, you know, the flower, you know, they put the... See, I'm thinking when I get there, I'm going to find all these beautiful ladies who are they going to greet me with those... the flower necklace and coconut everywhere and this and that. And so it's always been a place of my dream. But my wife tells me it's a bit of a pain to get there in a way that you need to get a lot of flights. You see, you can tell me, Holly.
You would do London to LA and then LA to direct to one of the islands, Maui or Oahu. So it's a lot of flying, but it's just two flights.
And is it worth it for me to keep it in my bucket list, or I should tear it up and go somewhere else? Tell me.
100%. So I am on my 100th episode of the podcast. I was interviewed about my travel diaries, and I picked Hawaii as the first place that I fell in love with. So yeah, keep it on your bucket list. It's really wonderful.
I see.
Yeah.
All right. So we got something in common. We all have one island that we like.
Absolutely. Good. Absolutely. Oh, thank
you so
much.
Well, wait a second. You haven't seen the island of Sardinia though.
No, I don't.
So at the moment you can't say that.
Fingers crossed. Next year I'm going to get there, and I'll send you a message, Luciano, for some tips.
Yes, please let us know, because I can tell you all the places that you should go to see. And if I'm there, we jump on my boat and I'm going to show you where the dolphins are.
Oh my God. Well, that would be top of my bucket list. That would be absolutely magical.
Well,
thank
that would be the least I can do, because I enjoy so much this chat that I'm having with you. So that will be my pleasure.
Thank you, Gino. Those were your travel diaries. It has been an absolute pleasure. Grazie mille.
No, prego, prego, prego. Il piacere è tutto il mio.
Oh, well, that has to be one of my very favourite episodes. A huge thank you to Gino for joining me on the podcast. And I looked up that Hawaiian TV show. I think it's called The Love Boat, because it's about a cruise ship called the Pacific Princess, so that would make sense, wouldn't it? And you can watch Gino's Italy, Secrets of the South, on Sundays at 7 p.m. on ITV1 and ITVX. Thanks so much for listening today. If you'd like to hear more from the podcast, don't forget to hit subscribe, or if you use Apple Podcasts, to press follow, so that a new episode lands in your podcast app each week. If you want to be the first to find out who is joining me on next week's episode, come and follow me on Instagram. I'm at Holly Rubenstein, and you'll also find me on Threads and TikTok. I'd love to hear from you. And if you can't wait until next week, remember, there's the first 9 seasons to catch up on. That's over 100 episodes to keep you busy there. Don't forget that all the destinations mentioned by my guests are included in the episode show notes here on your podcast app, and listed on my website, thetraveldiariespodcast.com. Thanks again, everyone. Take care, and I'll be back next week. Today's episode is supported by Airbnb. And what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of The Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.